Welcome to the Feed Central Hay Matters podcast, your go-to source for all things hay-related in Australia. I'm your host, John Paul Driver. In today's episode, we're joined by Damon Humphreys. And Damon's with Tagger. I'm excited about this. I just figured out what Tagger does. Tell us about your product.
Yeah, so in my region, or I guess in Australia as a whole, I'm not sure about you guys, but to export hay, we're required to put a tag in each individual bale before it goes to the exporter. So for traceability, this keeps track of the grower, the paddock, and the year that the hay was made. Normally, these tags are supplied beforehand prior to baling. And ideally, you would tag the hay in the paddock. Normally, you would apply the tag with a flathead screwdriver and literally push a tag into each bale individually.
I'm shaking my head. I'm just thinking about some of those paddocks that I saw up like in Hopetoun in Northern Victoria that are square miles, and thinking about the number of bales and tags that you'd have to put in. This is the problem that you're fixing.
Yeah, that's right. It's an insane amount of time and labour, and it's an extra thing to think about in an already quite complex operation. It's not uncommon for large operators in our area to employ someone full-time during their haymaking just to tag hay.
Amazing. Amazing.
So I studied at a Marcus Oldham College and an Ag Uni in Geelong, graduated with a Bachelor of Business. And when I came home, I got put in charge of the hay production of the farm. While the real boss, the old man, he was out contract winrowing. And yeah, I immediately saw that this tagging hay is incredibly inefficient.
So we know why it exists. How does it work?
Yeah, so I figured that if I was doing something thousands of times over and over again, a robot should be able to do that.
Yep.
I came up with an initial prototype, which was very, very simple. It was just a linear actuator, a 12-volt motor with some gears, and a bit of a feeding mechanism. It's funny how things work really well in your head, but in practice, it's nothing like that. Trying to feed tags out, it's like pushing a snake down a hole, they say. It was quite difficult to get the tags to feed nicely, just given their inherent flexibility. I don't know if you've seen the sort of tags we apply, but they're like a plastic strip, essentially.
Yeah. 30 centimetres long or something. I mean, something in that neighbourhood.
That was probably 3 or 4 years ago. I gave up on the project thinking that it just wasn't possible. But I kept thinking about it and optimised the geometry of the feeder to the point where the tags could create their own structure as they go through the feeder. And that allowed them to feed reliably enough. And then the next step was all the other smaller issues, like how to feed it the right amount for the size of tag, for example, and how to trigger the tagging cycle. All these were, in my opinion, lesser issues. So yeah, the system bolts to the side of most large capacity square balers and requires some sort of an air supply. It's generally going to be put on crone balers, particularly in our area, because crone balers are export hay balers.
Yeah, I think you're right in that, generally speaking, the high density crone bales work better for export.
Yeah, and they have an air supply on them.
It doesn't just work on crone balers, right? Any baler with an air supply will work.
Yes, or tractor with an air supply. It's designed to nestle in between two of the ribs on the back of the chamber. So you're sort of limited by the distance between two ribs. So you do need to check that size.
Yep.
But I believe crones are some of the slimmest dimensionally. So no reason it shouldn't fit on others. We run it on a Massey 2270 XD, and it works really well.
Is this product already to market?
It is. We've got limited production, and we're focusing on SA, particularly Bowco growers. Yeah, the system was designed for Bowco hay because we grow Bowco hay.
I've had the good pleasure of meeting Rob Lawson and talking with him, and good folks over at Bowco. What's the feedback that you've received from other farmers using it? I just imagine it was praises and thank yous.
So, yeah, some of the best feedback I got was that it was more reliable than the baler.
In all fairness, if you've ever climbed the ladder to fix Nodders, you know that that threshold is kind of low.
It was a brand new baler too.
Oh, okay.
tagging hay made by the other baler without the tagger really sucked.
That was
the other thing. Also had the feedback that it was hard for large hands to get in and start the tags feeding. And since then I've designed it to design the enclosure to be larger with a larger lid to help with this.
Mm-hmm.
And also it was quite difficult to remove the feeder originally, taking up to 10 or 15 minutes to remove with various bolts and and parts. But I've actually redesigned it so it's all held in with locating pins and magnets. So you can actually remove the feeder in really a few seconds if you ever need to.
Ah, okay.
So I've designed it to be as easy and as simple to operate as possible.
Now, where do you go from here? What's the next step?
Good question. I originally designed this for our operation because... Yeah.
You needed it.
Yes, that's right. And we're quite small hay growers, really. So I figure, well, gee, if we benefit from it, there'd be a lot of other guys that would benefit far more than us. I'm trying to get it to the point where it's somewhat scalable and marketable, so a farmer can just buy it as a kit and fit it to his own baler and it'll just work. The system is quite physically large and there are quite a few components. So at the moment I'm assembling them myself. So that's sort of the limit in production at this stage.
Sure.
But I'd rather start slowly and make sure the product is sound as opposed to just going crazy and...
Having problems everywhere, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Having two tags in one bale and not in the next and, oh yeah, I could...
Yeah.
It's not hard to envision that not working, but that's really cool. I like your approach. Do you have any plans for more automation technologies or is this your focus at the moment?
This is my focus. I'm trying to make the system as simple and as robust as possible. Adding to it, I think, could take away from it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Of course.
There's elegance in simplicity. At the end of the day, we just need tags in bales. Adding extra features to it adds complication, adds cost, and you have to ask yourself what value is it creating and who in the supply chain or the end consumer is going to see that value and be willing to pay more for it.
So in the case of Australia, where you have an export restriction, what is the thing that they're testing for that the tags are associated with?
The tags are there for the traceability because... Yeah. The process is you bale the hay, you tell the exporter there's hay in the paddock, they will send out a sampler who will come and core your hay. They then go off and test that hay.
Yes.
And correlate that to the paddock. So the tags are there.
For the whole system traceability.
That's right.
I gotcha. What advice would you give farmers considering adopting automated tools like your tagger system?
I guess you need to... consider what value it'll add to your system. There's no point just buying something for the sake of buying it. You need to put your numbers against it and make a decision that's right for your operation.
If somebody wanted more information about your tagger system, where would they go look?
Yeah, so we have a website, www.tagger.com.au. And we've also got a Facebook website and I've got a personal Twitter account I'm on as well.
Perfect. You mean X?
Yes, X.
X. I want to say thank you again to Damon Humphreys for joining us on the podcast today. It was great to see somebody innovating on a laborious task of putting tags in export bales. So that's this is really cool. I'm genuinely excited to see this roll out and I can see there's going to be adoption elsewhere. Absolutely wish you the best and this is wonderful.
Thanks for having me, John. I really appreciate it.
Big thanks to our guest today. This podcast is proudly presented by Feed Central. We're joined by Gavin Learson, and Gavin has designed the Bale Time Hay Monitor. Welcome to the podcast. How did you come up with this?
How did I come up with this? Well, I'm actually a sheep shearer. I shear sheep. That's my job, and I'm hopefully to ease off that and start making the hay monitor a little bit more. But while I was shearing, I was making a time how fast I can shear the sheep.
Right.
And the farmer, Ronnie, his name is, he was kind of getting a little bit annoyed that I was doing that instead of shearing sheep. So he said to me, make me something that tell me to get out of bed and bale the hay. So that's what I did, yeah. Before I become a shearer, I actually did an engineering electronics course, so I had the background of knowledge of electronics.
Okay, so you have this background in electronics, and the farmer says, tell me when to get up and bale hay. I sympathize with this, as I said, every morning this week we've been up 4 and 5 a.m. trying to catch a dew, and so that was the origins of the Bale Time Hay Monitor. Let's talk about what it actually does, and then we can talk about how it evolved.
It reads the humidity in and around the hay, I suppose you'd say, and it uses just basic messages at the moment. So you'd send the message to it above, it'll just vary on the person. Every farmer's different, you see. So
yeah.
I had to make it so it's quite versatile. So everybody has different balers. Everybody likes to do it a little bit different way. It's actually the farmer making the decision, say, if they want to bale at 65% humidity. When you got it right near the hay, it's quite directly related to air around the hay.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's got two sensors, so sometimes you might want to put one underneath the hay because you might, majority of the time, you probably might even know the outside of the hay, but it's probably sometimes the ground actually keeping the hay either moist or it's actually keeping it dry.
Yes.
So it's still reading humidity, but once you bale that hay bale, it's kind of directly related to humidity, if you know what I mean, the content.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So you'll figure out a percentage. So it might be like for alfalfa in America,
lucerne
as I call it. It could be more like 75%. So the oat and hay, that'll be more closer to 50 or 60%, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
As I said, everybody has a different idea on how high they need to do it. So they can set that by sending a message to the phone, and they can also just check it. So therefore, you don't have to go to the paddock to find out. You can just look on your phone, or you can set it to alert you when it gets to that time, then you can go to the paddock. So in your case, I'm presuming when there's no 45 degree day or 40 degree days,
yeah.
I'm presuming sometimes there's no dew. Then you would know not to go to the paddock at all for that night, so you could stay at home and stay in bed.
And actually get some sleep.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And sometimes it works the other way. Sometimes you think there's not going to be a dew, so you decide to stay in bed and it'll ring you up and you actually have to do 2 hours extra work than you thought you had to do. So it's not all good. It's not all good for sleep, but it's probably good for your business.
Yes. So we're talking about a device that measures the humidity both ambient and in the windrow. Because that's what we're trying to capture is, if we're talking about days without dew, because I haven't seen a dew in 3 weeks and I've been haying the whole time,
we
are counting on ambient humidity to rehydrate the leaves on the lucerne.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, now one of the problems that I have is that the cell phone service is not really good in some of the fields where I'm at. How does your product account for that?
Does it have any signal at all?
Yes.
So a message is very, very simple. It doesn't actually need you can have a very low signal or send a message. Compared to, I am going into the cloud, but I feel it's a lot more reliable just to sending a simple SMS message. But I do have an antenna that I can click to the box, that the higher you get the antenna, the better reception you'll get. So in some cases you can't use a small antenna that you connect to the box, you'll need to extend it. And as I said, the higher you get that antenna, the more likely that you'll get a reception to send the message. The only other issue would be, do you get the message in bed? Is your house got a if you know what I mean, on Musk. You got good signal in your bedroom, I mean, in your house, yeah.
Yeah.
If you don't get the signal on your phone, well, the bail time might be sending the message out, but you're not receiving the message. So that's another thing you have to think about too when you, yeah, will you get the message even if I've got the antenna high enough? And there's other way to think it. I'm guessing, is it quite flat where you are, or is it a little bit of hill?
It's hilly, mountainous. Yeah.
Hilly. So maybe you have to sometimes use your knowledge of, you might have to put it on the top of the hill and then use your knowledge of the different, if you know what I mean.
The high spots and the low spots in the field.
And you'll probably know that the lower spots were probably coming with the dew a little bit earlier
correct.
Than the high spots. But if you got no signal, maybe you will have to work that part out yourself.
I understand.
Set it a bit lower or all that sort of thing. But I am looking into maybe having a base station and just shooting that message up, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Have a direct line of sight.
Yeah.
But I haven't done that. Just hopefully if I can retire from shearing, if I've got enough people interested, and then I'll retire from shearing, then I can spend more time on innovating, I suppose you'd say. Yeah.
So you have these units out and about. There's farmers using them.
Yeah, I've sold probably about 130 of them. And I just had this presentation, right, and I talk about this guy that's called Ronnie, who I first made it for. At first, right, I sold a few. He bought his, then his neighbour bought one because of him. Then their friends bought them. I was selling them sort of locally that way, not really advertising that much. And then that sort of eased off. So I thought, well, maybe they got alternatives. But I didn't realise until now that he actually just ran out of friends. You know what I mean? He ran out of friends that it was actually... Now I actually have to do the hard work of selling it.
There's some marketing that needs to go into it.
Yeah, and I didn't know how hard marketing was until now. I've been doing these courses. They're called... it's called Farmers to Founders.
Yeah.
And it's a lot in it. Firstly, they wanted to find out if it's a problem or not, so we found out it's a problem, and then it's about talking and pitching and just learning how to talk, and that's probably the being a shearer. It's really out of my comfort zone. So yeah, I didn't sell any more, not because my product wasn't good enough. It was because Ronnie ran out of friends. We might need to make some more friends for Ronnie. Then I might be able to let more people know about it.
We can help you make friends. There's no doubt about that. The day in the life of the farmer using the bale time monitor, what does that look like? When are you setting the units out? I assume you have multiple units for multiple paddocks.
Oh, no. It's just basically it's... might depend on how many balers you have. So if you got two, I don't know, how many balers do you have?
Like two.
Do you have? Yeah. So generally, if you got two, you probably have two units, and then you decide where you put it. So I'm guessing there's, like I said about before, I'm guessing there's going to be spots that might be a little bit wetter than others.
Yeah.
But I'm also making an assumption that you know that. So therefore, you would actually put it in the right spot in the first place. You know, it's not like it's teaching you how to bail. You already know how to do that. It's just
it's just a decision aid.
It's just to help you make the right decision. Now, I think you should use everything. You should use the weather report. You should use your instinct. You should use your
chamber moisture monitor. Yeah. Your hands. I always advocate. There's no replacing your hands for testing hay for being ready to bale.
Except for that. These people that I first made it for, they don't actually feel the hay anymore. They just bale the bale and then they put the probe in and then they tell me it's right every time. So,
well, that's a good problem to have.
It's kind of saying that you don't need to touch the hay anymore. And it's also saying that someone like me, that I haven't baled before, I'm a shearer, that possibly that I could actually go do it for them as long as they told me when to do it or where to put the machine, if you know
there
what
you
I
go.
Mean.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, what are the most common misconceptions people have about farming and farm technology? Because you come from an electronics background. Where do the farmers misunderstand what you're trying to do?
The real advantage of me actually making this work is I'm a shearer, so I can actually talk to farmers. I know what their problem is because I understand them. But when technology, people sometimes talk to farmers, they don't understand each other. They kind of talk a different language, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I know.
Where I'm, I'm kind of in the middle, so I can sort of talk. I'm not as smart as them other technology people, but I'm probably, I shouldn't use this word smart, but I don't know, as I'm not as knowledgeable as them technology people, but I'm also more knowledgeable than a farmer. So the general that I understand when you're talking about what the misconception is, sometimes the technology people do not understand the real problem, what the farmer, the real problem is. But also, some of the farmers, and I'm saying farmers compared to hay baler contractors, I don't know if you're a contractor, so sometimes the farmer around here actually doesn't know enough about that. They haven't got a knowledge about their hay as much, and they put a bit of pressure on the, put a bit of pressure on the hay baler to bale the hay and try and get that, but where they probably should learn a little bit of more why the baler bales it, that has to wait that certain time, I suppose you say. So if you bale it too dry, then it'll break up the leaf and you'll lose that in the paddock and lose the quality. And if you bale it too wet, then you'll get mould in your hay bale, yeah. Maybe the other part is everybody thinks about the air, but not the ground. So I think you need to think about.
Oh yeah.
You need to think about, is it a drought? Is the moisture in a drought, or is it the and it's probably more the heat. Is the heat in the ground actually keeping the humidity down in the hay in the windrow, or whether you got, or is it keeping it wet? Now most of the time, I'm not sure. I might ask you a question. How do you measure? How do you know when to bale the hay now? Yourself, like, do you go by weather stations? Or?
We have weather stations that are nearby, but none of them are in my field. So we're always using proxy weather stations and just analyzing the trends in the humidity and the timing as to when the humidity starts to go up.
Have you measured the humidity? Have you measured the ground?
On our first cutting lucerne, often the ground wicks moisture into the bottom of the windrow and we have to flip it over and let it dry.
Yeah.
And then we'll go out in the mornings. This is our first cutting. After we've flipped the windrows over and allowed them to dry, they'll continue to wick moisture up. So then about an hour before we want to bale, when we get a little bit of dew or a little bit of humidity, we can go out there and flip those windrows one more time, or double the windrows, combine the windrows, and allow that ground moisture to dissipate just before we bale.
But there's no measurement in that, is there?
There's none. That's all subjective.
That's only in your hands or in your gut feel or your knowledge, I suppose. It's probably more knowledge, but yeah.
Well, it's going out there and scraping your thumbnail along the stem and all of those kind of things.
Yeah.
The old twist test.
Yeah, with the curedness, it could get a little bit confusing on how much it's cured or not, but I still believe there's a way we can use the tool that I've made to help you decide whether it's cured or not too, because if you put the sensor on it, if you put the sensor on the inside of the hay when it's green, it'll be a lot higher in humidity than the temperature, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I just haven't had time to test that, if you know what I mean, but I'd like to test that one day.
You're talking about things that you can do. What's next for Learson Electronics?
Yeah, the next thing is actually to take this from, and I would say that it's still a prototype, so I've been selling I've sold 130 of prototypes. So I'm planning to take this to the next step of making a production, so if I do get a lot of people ringing up and wanting it, that I can actually keep up with the demand. And that's what I've always been worried about, that I don't want to advertise too much because I won't be able to keep up with the demand. But I actually make all the circuit board myself, so I'm planning to get someone out. Like I get China to make the PCB, but then I solder all the parts in. I'm planning to get it all assembled, pre-assembled, so then I can just connect it together and then post it off in the mail. Any at the moment it's only Australia, but it would be nice in 5 years' time that I'm actually posting it to you in wherever you live, Canada or something. I'm not sure where else you live.
I'm not very far from Canada, but I am in the States.
Yeah. So I'd love to, and that's not really about money either. That's just because it's kind of one of my goals to have the best hay monitor in not only Australia but in the world, that I can help everybody. Because the better quality hay you got, it's going to be better for animals. It's going to be better for just everybody, really. People.
Farm profitability. relationships with spouses, actually getting to sleep, all sorts of important things.
Actually saying that, though, one of the reasons I kept on and persisting at making this sort of thing is the first guy I made it for, Ronnie. Ronnie's wife come up to me and she said to me, thanks. And I said, what for? And I said, she said, oh, Ronnie's so much happier now. He's just getting much better sleep. He's not grumpy anymore. So that's one of the reasons why I kept working 7 days a week while I was shearing sheep during the week and doing these things on the weekend that keep it's my drive, I suppose. It's not really the money. It's just that it just keeps me ticking along and keep me trying to improve it to, and some of it's just making it hardy so it doesn't break, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And sometimes I'm not sure if you have cows out there, sometimes the cows get out there and break it, so you got to kind of make it hardy. Not all to do with the technology.
I really appreciate the story about the farmer's wife. I have one of those, and she really appreciated it when I figured out how to tap into the weather stations and figure out the humidity and watching that. It does make a huge, there's a quality of life element that's really hard to quantify into a business, but it really is there. This is such a cool product. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
And I talk to a lot of farmers in the shearing shed, but I only talk, and that's in my area. It's great to talk to someone else like yourself that's in a different part of the world and learn from you, and as well as that from learning from the local farmers that I work for.
Gavin, thank you again for joining us today. I really enjoyed your story about seeing a need, creating a solution. I can see that there's growth and expansion on the way, and I'm excited for you and your products. This is wonderful. If you'd like more information about the Baletime Hay Monitor, you can go to baletime.com.au and see the product and see the testimonials and learn more about this awesome product. This podcast is proudly presented by Feed Central. Stay tuned in for upcoming episodes.